Hello and welcome to the Scottish Parliament podcast. My name is Emma Armstrong and I work in the web and social media team at the Parliament. Today I'm with Christina Leston-Bandera, Professor of Politics at the University of Leeds, with particular expertise in Parliament, citizenship and public engagement. Christina is also chair of the UK Study of Parliament Group, is co-director of the Centre for Democratic Engagement and has had various other roles, including being a member of the UK Digital Democracy Commission. And more recently, you came and advised the Scottish Parliament Commission on Parliamentary Reform. Thank you for joining us, Christina. So you've been researching and observed how legislatures work and how they engage with the public for a number of years now. And you've been including the Scottish Parliament in the comparative element of that pretty much from day one. But before we talk about us, it would be good if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your role.
Okay, so I'm co-director of the Centre for Democratic Engagement at the University of Leeds, as you said, and my research is very much about Parliament and the public. So how the public engages with Parliament and what Parliaments as institutions can do to facilitate that engagement and to promote it.
Good. As you know, the Parliament and the other devolved legislatures in the UK are 20 years old this year. And we've been looking back at what we've achieved over that time and trying to make sure that we continue to learn and adapt and look forward to the next 20 years. In your view, what do you think have been the biggest achievements of our institutions?
And I think definitely to give a voice to the Scottish people. It's definitely given Scottish people a stage at the national level. It's definitely promoted the Scottish cause, but also all the issues and matters that are of importance for people in Scotland. But then at local level also, it's given them more of a voice at local level, which they may not have had before. And that is clear in the number of initiatives going on and even actually sometimes in leading in types of policy. So for instance, if you think about the smoking ban in public places, that's very much an idea that was developed in Scotland and then went nationally. So even marking policy elsewhere.
When the Parliament was originally established, it was based on some founding principles, which included openness and accessibility. So from the start, we set out quite consciously to involve the people of Scotland in decision making. Do you think that we've achieved that?
I think so. I think the first few years of the Scottish Parliament were particularly strong in that. And I think when the Scottish Parliament came in at the turn of the century, it actually symbolises still today a very different way of looking at parliaments and public. And I still often use, if not always, the example of the Scottish Parliament when it was reintroduced in terms of, for instance, being about openness. It was the first parliament in the world that existed online as well as offline. So anything that existed in terms of businesses was also online. That was a very, very big statement at the time when many parliaments still didn't have websites, for instance. There's also, it developed very early on, very comprehensive programs of outreach and communities to go out to the communities and bringing those people into parliament. And so it did a number of things. And obviously it brought in the public petition system also linked to parliament, which again has been very important. So it has produced a lot of channels for the public to engage with parliament. And those did work very well for a very long time. I think more recently, maybe there was a bit more of less of a feeling that it was doing so many different new things. But then the commission, as you mentioned at the beginning, came in and looked at it again. And I think now is actually, from what I've seen, there's a lot of activity happening.
Do you think there are any areas specifically that we could improve on and what that would entail?
I think maybe one of the areas, and I mean, this is coming from me looking from an outsider. I haven't done empirical research on the Scottish Parliament for some time now. I did do a few years ago. But coming from as an outsider is more maybe the integration with parliamentary business that I think needs to be stronger. And that's not necessarily just the Scottish Parliament. Many other institutions, legislatures have actually that same issue. But there is a lot of activity, a lot of innovation, a lot of really good work in terms of disseminating what Parliament does, educating the public about what Parliament does, even in terms of social media, you know, trying to engage people that way. And maybe the next stage or what needs to be done more is to make sure that that engagement, that input, those voices from the public are more integrated to what Parliament does in its business.
Mm-hmm. So making sure really that that engagement work makes a difference to what happens in the committees specifically, but also the debate and chamber itself. You mentioned digital democracy and online engagement. Is there anything that you think we can learn from other parliaments? Have you got any examples of some recent innovation that you think we could try out?
I think sometimes it's actually about more experimenting with things. That's something that parliaments are not very good at doing. Mm-hmm. Parliaments are very much risk-averse institutions. And actually, if I would say what to learn from other parliaments is about experimenting different things. More flexible models, I think, work better. So, for instance, the House of Commons in Westminster, although it's very traditional in many ways, has recently experimented with lots of different ways, more flexible ways of engaging the public and then linking that to parliamentary business. Something that I particularly like is an example from the Brazilian parliament, the lower chamber, Chamber of Deputies, which is an innovation fund, innovation competition, where parliamentary staff can compete for that and propose a specific project. And again, it's about bringing in ways that staff themselves can try out new ideas and ensuring that they have the flexibility to then adapt to the parliamentary business.
Mm-hmm. Deliberative engagement is something that we've been trying to do more on recently. That was one of the recommendations that came out from the commission we spoke about. Recently, we held our first citizens' jury on biodiversity and wildlife, which involved 21 randomly selected people from across Scotland as a representative group of Scottish society. They came in to the Parliament to learn more about this complex issue and then discussed and came to a consensual set of recommendations that will shortly be considered by the Environment, Climate Change and Land Reform Committee. Why do you think this form of engagement is important? And also, are there any risks that we should consider?
Mm-hmm. Methods like the citizen jury or citizen assembly are very good to address specific types of issues, so the very complex issues that affect the whole of society, but also the ones that tick the box of difficult to resolve, the ones on which parties can't agree. And so for some areas, they are a very good way of coming to a set of recommendations, set of ideas from people from different points of view. The risks of it is, for instance, if they're not taken seriously. So you do all that effort, you listen to the public, make it, obviously there's lots of ways of running it also, so obviously it needs to be done properly. But if it's done properly, then it also needs to be taken seriously by decision makers. And if it's not, then that's a huge risk because you've raised the expectation and then you haven't met it.
Yeah. Final question. I can't really let you go with asking about what you think about the current political climate, not just in the UK, and whether or not you think that will impact on how parliaments engage with their public. Are there any developments that you think might make politicians even more risk averse?
Yes, I mean, the current environment is very polarised, very divisive, and quite often quite nasty. But on the other hand, there's lots of other things going on that people don't necessarily talk about. And I'm an optimist by nature, so I tend to focus on all the other activities that take place. So, for instance, you know, in areas like small engagement through social media, small engagement through petitions, that sort of thing, there's a lot in there going on. But obviously, those don't necessarily make the news. What makes the news is the nastiness of some of the polarisation going on now. Mm-hmm. So it does make politicians more wary of engagement, and it does make the job more difficult for parliaments. But also, I think it can't be ignored. People do expect to be engaged. People do expect to know what's going on. They expect to give a say. So to go back to thinking to say that we only consult citizens every 4 or 5 years, it's not going to make it go away. It's going to make the polarisation worse, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. Thank you very much for your time, Christina. And to everybody at home, thank you for listening.
And now we move on to Digital Democracy, Engaging with Parliament, a panel run by the Scotland's Futures Forum. Here's Angus MacDonald, MSP, and the panel in Committee Room 6.
Today we're going to explore how the Scottish Parliament can best engage with citizens in a digital age. This event is hosted by Scotland's Future Forum in conjunction with the Parliament's Digital Engagement Tools team. And we have presentations from Professor Christina Leston-Bandera and Christine Connolly, who I'll introduce in a moment, and also an update on digital engagement work here in the Scottish Parliament. The Commission on Parliamentary Reform recommended that within the parliamentary service we should develop and trial new emerging technologies and increase skills and knowledge in more tried and tested digital technologies. And I understand that much work's been going on behind the scenes in procuring and piloting digital engagement tools. And as Deputy Convener of the Public Petitions Committee, I got to see this work in action and was suitably impressed, I have to say. The committee launched an inquiry some time ago to explore mental health support services for young people in Scotland. And that was in response to a petition that raised important issues on the subject. The aim of the inquiry, which is still ongoing, is to understand and suggest improvements on how young people can get the mental health advice and support that they need. And that's becoming an increasing issue, as we can see as MSPs from our inboxes and mailbags. So to do this effectively, the committee recognised that it was critical to engage directly with young people, a group that Parliament have struggled to engage with in the past. It was felt that a change of approach was required to achieve this type of engagement, and the committee therefore took the opportunity to work with the Community Engagement Unit to pilot a new digital engagement tool called Dialogue. The tool enabled people to engage with the inquiry in a more informal and, if they wanted, anonymous way, by getting people to share their experiences and views of mental health support services for young people and to discuss with others how these services could be improved. Three separate discussion groups were set up, one for young people, one for professionals providing mental health support services, and one for parents and carers. And it's perhaps fair to say that the young people group generated the most amount of engagement and discussion. And from that perspective, the committee achieved its objective of engaging with this demographic. It's worth highlighting, however, that we heard less from professionals and parents and carers using Dialogue, but received a number of views through the more traditional written submission route. This clearly indicates that there's still much to learn about how best to use digital engagement tools to target the people we want to hear from in the right way. So that being said, I'm pleased that the inquiry piloted this tool to help inform this learning in shaping the role of digital engagement in the Parliament's work in the future. So I'd like to welcome our first speaker, Professor Christina Leston-Bandera, who is Professor of Politics at Leeds University and a member of the House of Commons Speaker's Digital Democracy Commission. Christina has over 20 years of working in Parliament, and her research focuses on the relationship between Parliament and citizens, particularly public and digital engagement. So I'm certain she'll have much to share with us this afternoon. So it's over to you, Christina.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Yeah? Thank you very much for inviting me here to talk about digital engagement in Parliament. I could go on and on for hours. Ali asked for 10 minutes, so I'll make the effort to only talk for 10 minutes. I'm always really happy to come to the Scottish Parliament, so I was really pleased to be able to come here and share some of my reflections. And also to hear more about what you're doing, because I know there's a lot going on in here. Now, Ali asked me to talk for 10 minutes about an overview of digital engagement in Parliament, and to use some examples of what other parliaments are doing. So I'll do that, and I'll steer away from the Scottish Parliament explicitly, because you know far better what's going on in here at the moment, and there's a lot going on in here. So what I'm going to try to do is just look at the context in terms of Parliament and digital, some of the tensions there, and public engagement, and look at some examples and some of the challenges, and then talk briefly about the future. So Parliament versus digital. It's not a nice, easy relationship, let's say. It's quite a flawed relationship, to be honest, for lots of reasons. Parliaments came into digital quite late in terms of public institutions. There's lots of other institutions out there that came in much quicker and are made in terms of their decision-making processes are much more agile to adapt to digital. So it's a difficult relationship for one reason or another. Digital tends to work very fast. Parliaments, it's not just one specific parliament. Parliaments with all the different politics with it and all different agendas tend to develop in a slow pace. It's about collective decisions. So there's lots of difficulties in that relationship. And inherent to that is all the different tensions. So if you come from digital, I've done lots of interviews with people just from digital, people from Parliament. And if you come from digital, digital thrives in risk, innovation, experimenting, trying out new things. Those things are very difficult for parliamentary institutions to do for lots of reasons. Legislatures tend to be very risk-averse institutions for lots of reasons to that in terms of the collective decision-making, the politics involved in the institution, etc. So it's a difficult relationship there inherent to the whole process. But I also like to point out always that it's not a fix. So if the processes are not right, if you put a digital method on top, a digital channel on top of that, it's not going to fix it. If anything, it could make it worse. So if there's inherent problems in terms of being access or being communication, whatever those may be, if you just bring the digital into it, but you don't think about the processes behind it, then it's not going to do anything about it. It could actually make it worse. Having said all of that, it also expands lots of opportunities, and there's lots of opportunities that does bring to parliaments, particularly as parliaments tend to be embedded into one building, which symbolically is very important for a nation, and tends to be in one place. Although I know there's, you know, parliamentarians can go out to see communities, but it has one place, one building, and the digital enables reaching out in terms of space, in terms of time, bringing in people at different times, in terms of asynchronous communications, for instance. But also, it can provide, I know it's a bit odd to say this in a time of huge polarization and very nasty social media noise going on, but it can provide actually for online spaces of reflection where people understand the space and have the time to think about what they're saying. They have the time to assimilate particular, say, information that they may not have, say, in a face-to-face, in a hearing situation, that sort of thing. It also gives a potential in terms of analysis. You know, if you bring in lots of information from the public, then a lot of the problems that I'm finding with interviews of parliamentary staff that they have is what do you do with information? How do you analyze it? If you have 30,000 replies over a weekend, what do you do with it? Digital tools do enable you to listen through that noise and to do something with it. But again, there needs to be a process with that. So there's plenty of opportunities in there and potential. But I also want to just touch on the public engagement journey, because again, some people see public engagement as just providing information or making that accessible. Others is completely the other side, is about shaping policy and totally participating full on. And actually it's more of a journey. There's lots of different elements to it and it all go together. And it's important to have that information, but it's also important to understand that information in terms of not being just on the receiving end, but assimilating, thinking, oh, okay, that's what it means. And then I put in there in terms of identification, understanding the relevance of that for me. So it's not just about that there's institutions there that do the politics, but actually how is that relevant for me? For my son's got mental health issues, how will that help his own life or the way the school deals with him? And as I often say to my students, I'm not normal. I'm not representative of society. My students doing politics are definitely not representative of society. Most people who wake up in the morning are not, don't have a drive to go and participate and do politics. They get involved because it matters to them. They get involved because it's an issue that gets to them. So that relevance and be able to understand, to connect that to an institution is really important. And then you can move on to participation, replying to calls for evidence or going to a workshop or whatever it is. And you might even lead to what I call intervention, which is more about shaping that policy, being able to lead in terms of what policymakers may be looking at. And all of that matters because this is a quote from one of my interviewees who was involved in the online process of shaping a bill. Because it feels empowering. So this interviewee, she said, it does feel empowering that you can actually have your own comments on a bill. And this is important because it's quite often the interviews that I do, it's not about the outputs, it's not about the results. People don't necessarily, obviously they get involved because they want to change something, they bother about something. But if they feel they have had a fair listen, someone has listened to them, listened to other people too, and then made a decision. As long as they know what the process was, they tend to be happy with that. So it's not necessarily, so that sense of empowering is about being listened to, really. So examples of digital engagement. There's absolutely loads out there, as you all know. And obviously, I'm not going to go through all that. I've got so many examples I could talk to. So I just go through it really, really quickly, just in terms of different types of things out there. So from the European Parliament panoply of social media, which if you are into social media, you will know if there's a social media platform, they are there. And they were very much the ones who first made more complex use of social media. Since around 2009, they were, or very soon after that, they were integrating politicians on chats with citizens, which at the time was very new. Snapchat, they're even on Snapchat, they're everywhere. They also have a massive team to deal with that. They have a massive team to obviously to deal with all of that process. And then in here, I've got examples from Brazil. Again, Brazil, very polarized society, lots of problems with society, but if you want examples of innovation of digital engagement for parliament, go to Brazil or to Latin America. There's lots going on in there. Lots of problems with it, but lots going on in there. So at the top there, I've got E-Democracia, which is the lower chamber platform for involvement with parliamentary procedures. And this was developed in 2009, which is very early for parliament to do something like this. And it's quite complex today. There's a variety of things they can do. Sorry, it's all in Portuguese, but there's a variety of things they can do. They can interact with live audiences, live hearings, sorry. They can comment on legislation going through. They can actually give ideas for new legislations. They can also vote on specific proposals. And the one you have at the bottom is from the Senate, which is, you know, a similar type of format. This is a platform that they both developed themselves. They're not going outside, using all the tools out there. They did it themselves. Again, they've got massive budgets, massive resources to use and to develop these products. There's lots of problems with these. There's lots of good things about it. And we can talk about that question Q&A if you want me to. This is one example from a more recent example from France. If you're interested in engagement and parliaments, have a look at France at the moment in the National Assembly. There's lots going on. It doesn't necessarily mean it will all happen, but there's lots of activity and therefore a variety of political circumstances. And they've just introduced these citizens' consultations, which they use in a variety of ways for pre-legislative scrutiny or then with a parliamentary activity. These are examples of people being able to vote on specific bills going through Parliament, which can have some pluses, can also be very dangerous. I'm just giving you examples. And this, I think, is more interesting. This is actually from Westminster, but it's a small example. It's a more flexible type of example. And I think actually quite often what drives good digital engagement is small things, is specific things, it's innovation, experimenting. And in here, what you have is a select committee in the House of Commons in Westminster, Science and Technology, that use hashtags to crowdsource ideas to determine their next inquiries, My Science Inquiry. And they've done at least a couple of these now. And what you have there on the right-hand side, if you saw that live, you'll see also the cute baby, but you've got a professor there talking about doing an inquiry about land management. So I think your citizen jury was in that area, actually. And what he was able to do was to film and show an example of or what that would be about. And so they've had this process of bringing in people to say what inquiry we should do, and then they actually do the inquiry about that. They don't go and do something else. Very important. Another example, these fact checks. Again, it's small examples, but in here, a couple of committees have used fact checks in terms of they've done a report, the committee's done a report, the government has responded, what we do with that response now, and they've selected, you can't put just the whole report out and see what do you think of these, everyone, because then it'll become very political and you'll get nowhere, it's all about the big picture. But actually what they've done is they broke it down into specific points and ask what do you think of these. And in specific case, this was Women Equalities Committee. It was an inquiry about sexual harassment in schools. And on the back of this, the government actually had to amend part of their report because they were citing statistics that were not representative of the reality out there in terms of what's happening in schools. So again, it's just an example. These are examples of linking in the public with ongoing activity, which again gives that flexibility. So in here we have crowdsourcing, the picture at the top, crowdsourcing ideas, or thoughts, what people think about a specific topic, which is then going to be discussed in the Westminster Hall debate, which obviously works if then the MP does use that. If he doesn't use that, then it's one of those cases that better not do it. But if the MP then does use those ideas, then it brings in an input from the public to the debate. At the bottom there, I've got Ask Pickles. I don't know if anyone knows what that reference is for. But Westminster introduced the idea of Ask Gove. So for the public to submit questions to Secretary of State. But there was also an Ask Pickles that no one talks about. And actually, that one led to a change in policy in legislation because someone brought in a specific thing about how local government's organised. And the government wasn't aware of that. He wasn't aware of that. And it was changed. So it's just an example. And then next to it, you've got another example from Brazil again about people being able to send questions as a hearing is taking place in the committee, which is then put to people in the committee. Online surveys used quite a bit as a way of gathering information, but then also about using then shorthand ways of giving the feedback to population, to the public, which is quite often that's a difficult thing to do. How do you close the feedback loop? And then this example I quite like because it's about integrating activity and data. I've done a lot of work recently on petitions in Westminster, and there's lots and lots, I'm looking at Catherine there, lots and lots of petitions, as you might have heard. I know there's also in Scotland, but you know, with thousands and thousands of signatures. But then in some ways that data is not necessarily used because you only hear about the 100,000, 10,000. And this is an example where they used 3,000 people who had signed a petition, and then they want to ask questions about unemployment and young people, and then link the two together, and that way they were able to reach a public that they would not have been able to reach. So it's about integration of activity. And then finally, my final example is you don't have to do it all yourself. Go outside. So this is examples of two hackathons developed by parliaments, by legislatures, where you bring people, digital people inside and say, this is our data. What sort of things could you do with this data? And that has led to a few good ideas from outside organisations. But also the diabetes and the nurses there, it's about doing online debates, not necessarily just on platforms within Parliament, but outside where those communities are. So these are two very active communities, nurses and people suffering from diabetes. If there was a discussion to be on these areas, to go over there. So there's plenty going on. There's lots of buts, obviously. My main one is this one. So this is a quote from an interviewee who said, having submitted the evidence, it was as though I had tossed the ball into the ocean, no sign of it. I love that idea. This happens a lot. So to be doing that engagement, there has to be a feeling that it's going somewhere, that someone is on the other side listening. And this can take many different forms. So lots of challenges here. And I'm sorry I'm going on a little bit. I'll try to wrap up and... So integration with parliamentary business is a crucial one. If it's doing the engagement, if it's bringing in ideas, how does that link with other things? How is that then used within parliamentary business, whether it's reports, whether it's debates, whatever it is, but also between services? So there's not specific services that just do engagement and others don't do that. But it's a service that it's an integration between different types of staff and politicians within the legislature.
Another challenge is the analysis of the public input. And again, in here, I know that sometimes you want lots of comments, but then if you get so many, it's really difficult to differentiate what's the actual voice in all the noise. Closing the feedback loop is always a problem. There's different ways of doing it, and it's even more difficult in the legislative process because, as we know, policy doesn't take place just like that. Sometimes it can take months and months or even years to actually lead something, and that's very difficult to communicate. Reaching relevant audiences, again, difficult. It's about going outside. There's a really good quote from a report done in Westminster about disabled people and online rights. And someone said, some of you might have heard this, we're not hard to reach, we're just easy to ignore. And that's another thing about it. Sometimes actually those groups are out there, but they may be in communities that we may not necessarily engage with them. And it's about understanding where those communities are and taking them seriously. Avoiding silos for that integration of different services, and evaluation obviously goes without saying in terms of those methods. What does the future look like? I'm always very optimistic, so I'll say flexible, relevant, integrated and open. Basically, flexible to the situation. There isn't one magic wand for everything at all. Different circumstances will require different methods, and actually most cases of really good engagement are those that use digital, use face-to-face, use a variety of methods, and that are relevant to the people, to the situation at heart. So to sum up, digital engagement offers definitely great potential, but it's not a fix. It needs to be matched with articulating a range of different methods. But the core priorities, I think, are, in general, from what I see in different parliaments, it's about integration with parliamentary business, feedback to audiences, which is a really difficult one, and to listen to the voices among the noise, because there's a lot of noise out there, particularly in social media and digital. And that's me. Sorry, I went beyond 10 minutes.
No, it's okay. Thank you, Christina. A very helpful insight, I think, into how digital engagement is operating, particularly elsewhere. And I think one of the salient points was the fact that if we're going to develop this, it has to be meaningful engagement. As Christina says, we're running a wee bit over time, so I'll now hand over to our second speaker, the Scottish Government's Digital Engagement Manager, Christine Connolly. Chris is currently working with the Scottish Parliament's own Digital Engagement Tools team to help to establish and promote their work, and Chris will share today how the Scottish Government's taken steps towards integrating digital engagement into its consultation work.
Okay.
Over to you.
May I have the clicker?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you for that. I'm Chris Connolly, Senior Digital Engagement Manager at the Scottish Government. I'm just going to do a real quick run through of who we are, what we do, where we came from, give you a quick little example and some challenges that we face, and then wrap that up. So 10 minutes is plenty of time to do that, right? So we're a team of four, Christian, Chris, Alistair, Ekin. We've been around for 4 years, and we've actually accomplished quite a bit in the last 4 years, which is pretty exciting. And we are now moving into digital engagement 2.0. So we've got some new things coming up. So I'll just say watch this space in the meantime. So our remit, we are working to support an open and accessible government. We're supporting the Community Empowerment Bill. We're working on a participation framework. And we're also working in a more global sense with the commitments around the Open Government Partnership and specific commitments around consultation and participation. So what do? We use digital tools and techniques to involve people in the development of better and more accountable policies. That sounds really great, but how do you actually do that? That sounds just like a lot of civil service speak, if you ask me. So we focus on three things. Our first priority is e-consultation. So in the last 4 years, we've worked to improve the way the Scottish Government consults by putting all consultations online on our consultation hub using Citizen Space. That's over 100 consultations a year, tens of thousands of responses received via that place. It's streamlined the way that people respond to consultations, how they access them. It's streamlined the transparency and openness of the process. It's enabled us to use media, embed videos, and also make it more accessible for screen readers and different types of equalities needs. Another thing we focus on is skills. So helping to make Scottish government truly digital with our digital's first agenda. So that's done via guidance and training. We've written guidance on blogging, on consultation, with a new guidance to be coming out very soon. We've also worked on things around community management and more bespoke working directly with teams to meet whatever digital engagement needs that they have. And then finally, the kind of the fun and exciting cool stuff is the experimentation, and a bit to reflect on what Christina was saying is trialing different things. This is the fun part. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but no one has figured this out, and there's great successes and there's failures throughout, and there's always room for improvement. So this collaborating with other governments, other teams being here today is really useful for us. Well, so we've learned a few things over the years, and sorry, the color's a little bit off on the screens. But we've learned, first and foremost, that goals should be outcome focused and not tools focused. It's not rare that we'll be approached by a policy team requesting to use a particular tool, but not actually thinking about what goal they're trying to achieve. So stepping backwards and reframing what the ask is. Learning who our audience is, who is it that we're trying to communicate with, and how should we reach them. The method is so important. Putting something online is not sufficient in order to say that's quality engagement. You need to go to where the people are, so figuring out how to find them, and using the right language. This is, I can't say like how often we might consult on a mass thing and there's not been consideration to who the audience is and how best to reach them in a way that makes sense, that terminology. Another thing is incentive. Why should people care? Why should they get involved? Their time is valuable. Do they really want to engage with an organization that maybe, as Christina said, doesn't feed back or tell you what the outcome is? Especially when there's billions of kitten videos out there. Like, you know, I think I'd rather watch those than respond to a questionnaire. So yeah, incentive, be clear, what's up for grabs, tell people, be honest, feedback. Resource as well. These things take time, they take work. We need to foster engagement exercises. You can't put something up and leave it there and hope that people are going to engage with you and that's going to be quality work. It's resource intensive. That's a bit of a challenge that we face, and I'll come on to that. And then finally, analysis and feeding back. So if we're engaging in various different methods, how are we going to analyze all that? How do we collate all that data? How do we take responses from a consultation and social media and bring that together to something meaningful? And how do we reach out and go back to people and say, thank you very much for responding to us? It's maybe a year down the line that a policy or a decision is going to come out. But how, like, where do you send people in that meantime and then get back to them? So I'm gonna give a quick example on something that we recently worked on, which is a deposit return scheme. I'm sure people are familiar with that, but basically it's a deposit you pay on a single-use drinking vessel that upon return, you get your money back. And then it gets recycled. And the whole goal of the scheme is to improve recycling. I think Scotland sells something around like 2 billion bottles a year, and only half of those are recycled. So we got involved. So obviously this is mass scale. It affects everyone in Scotland, whether you're a resident or you're a visitor. If you're a business, a consumer. So engagement was really, really important. We needed to make sure that we could reach as many people as possible, make them aware of what the scheme is, and get their views on how it should be implemented, and what should the deposit be, where do you return your bottles and everything. So there was a huge social media campaign, and of course there was a consultation. So we got about over 3,000 views. The report has come out and has been published, so feel free to read that in your spare time if you're not busy with kitten videos. but yeah, like that's great, but that's not really enough, is it? So we had to go above and beyond. So we, the digital engagement team, tried a few different things that we've not done before. The first being a poll on Twitter. So this is a very succinct way of explaining what this scheme is and getting people to share views. So we had over 7,000 votes, which was really something we were chuffed with, because that means that 7,000 people that learned about a scheme and word had gotten out and they actually engaged with it. So that's pretty good. We also did various things. We had polls and videos and infographics. We tried things on Facebook and Twitter. I think there was stuff on Instagram as well. So again, reaching audiences where they are in the native spaces that they're comfortable engaging with, and then always signposting back to the consultation for more information and wider engagement. We also tried a chatbot for the very first time. This is on Facebook Messenger. People don't have time to respond to 50 questions on policy. They may have 3 minutes, though, to share their views on something that does affect their lives. So we thought it might be a good opportunity. People have phones in their pockets. They're pretty used to using Facebook Messenger. Can we put a 3-minute survey out there and get people's views on this? So in the end, we had about 1,000 responses. First time, we learned a few lessons, how to improve for the next time. But again, that's almost 1,000 extra people that had an opportunity to give their views on something that's going to affect them. So overall, pretty exciting. And it ticked our boxes. It ticked our goals, our audience. We were able to reach them. There was a clear incentive. This is going to affect your life. Have a say. Resource-wise, it wasn't very intensive. We managed to turn this around in a couple of weeks. And feeding back, we've got a report up, and we've had good feedback on this experience, so that was good. Additionally, it's not just about digital. Digital is to augment engagement. But we had 30 events across Scotland for people to have face-to-face engagement and feedback on this proposed scheme. So again, getting on the ground, having real conversations, giving people an opportunity. At points in grocery stores, at the point of purchase, when people are maybe thinking about that more, could I afford a deposit? If I can, how much or not? So challenges. There's quite a few with digital engagement. We're a team of four. I would love to be a team of 400, but we're not. So we're limited in what we can do. We're focused on training and providing guidance rather than actually being able to embed and work directly with teams to deliver some of these engagement exercises. There's a bit of a culture change that's necessary, which is digital engagement can be seen as an add-on, as extra work. Is it meaningful? Is it as valid as a consultation response? So how do we break down these barriers? We've done a lot of analysis in terms of how civil servants feel about social media, what barriers there are. There's things just a lot like lack of skills, and then there's more emotional attachments where I don't see a value, I don't care, I don't have time for this. So how do we turn that around? Further challenges around just not having enough people in a team to actually run a positive engagement exercise well and effectively. There's a real danger of not doing it right and not being genuine, that you're risking your reputation. So how do we make this a priority in the first place? I could go on and on about all the positives and all the challenges, but we're pretty happy. Digital Engagement 2.0 is coming, and watch this space. So thank you very much. Cheers.
Okay, that's great, Chris. Thanks very much for giving us the insight from the Scottish Government's perspective. And I'm actually delighted that you mentioned the deposit return scheme, because I've been closely involved in that, and I've been banging on about it since I saw it in Norway in 1985. So we always get there in the end. Time is marching on, so I'll now introduce Ailsa Byrne-Murdoch, who, when she's not doing her day job as a spice researcher, heads up the Parliament's digital engagement work, for a brief update on what's already being done here.
Thanks, Angus. I will race through this, conscious of time. So basically, our digital engagement tools team has existed for 2.5 years, which might come as a surprise to quite a lot of people. But we're basically a cross-organisational group that sits broadly under the banner of the Public Engagement Group and Board, but we also give feedback into the Digital Strategy Board. We don't sit within a specific office, which is probably why a lot of people don't know who we are. We've got members from Clarking, Outreach, Spice, Web Team, BIT and Committee Engagement Unit since they were formed as well. So, and none of us do this as our day job. We all do it in addition to what we do normally. So when we were formed, it was very much, it was before the Commission on Parliamentary Reform report, but it ties in very strongly to recommendation 64 from that, which is to start exploring the use of digital tools. So we were looking at kind of identifying and piloting and evaluating digital tools. So early work was based very much around getting a tool to have a go with, which is Dialogue, which I'm hoping quite a few people have heard of. And with that went establishing a governance model for it, looking at how we moderate, looking at the actual process of how, when a committee wants to use a tool, does it actually go about it? How does that fit into engagement planning, etc.? So one of our aims is that the use of digital tools is not by any means a replacement for existing engagement work. It's something which is very complementary, it's very measured, and it's very appropriate. And you've already heard today about how it has to fit in with the audience. So these are the kind of questions that we ask when we want to use a tool. So we procured Dialogue quite early on. We've used that with the Local Government Committee. Angus has spoken about using it with the Public Petitions Committee, which we were really happy with the outcome of that. We think it really proved the use of these tools. And we used it with our own staff day last year. So some of you might remember taking part in a discussion about what was going to happen during the staff day. That was used using Dialogue. More recently, we've been working with colleagues in procurement. We've established a what we think is quite an agile and innovative procurement model. Say that smiling. And we've managed to procure a couple of new tools. Those tools are called Your Priorities, which is an Icelandic tool about debate and making decisions, and Citizen Space, which Chris has already mentioned is in use at the Scottish Government, which is more about collecting information. At the moment, we are raising awareness. That's why we're all here today. And knowledge about the tools. We're trying to get the word out about the fact that these are available, make people a little bit more confident about seeking to use them. We're doing some work within Spice about looking at how the outputs from these tools are used, how we process the vast amount of data which comes out of them, and how that affects the product which goes to committees. And of course, we're looking for opportunities to actually use these tools. So this is the big sales pitch. If anybody is interested in tools, talk to us. Talk to myself. Talk to Ali. There are other members of the team around generally. We're quite happy to explore where they could be used, whether it's in a committee setting, whether there's other internal settings. We've got them there. We're really ready to get out and try them.
Okay, sadly, I think we've run out of time. If you have any follow-up questions, Ailsa will be happy to pass these on to our speakers and to address any questions about work in the Parliament. So all that remains for me is to thank Christina and Chris for coming to speak to us today and to thank you all for attending. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.